Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and welcome to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and tonight we speak with Hollywood couple Dennis White and Cherry Johnson. Our phone lines are open. The call-in number is 917-932-8962, and the chat line is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/NWCAVE and click tonight's show. Tonight, we're going to discuss Black in America. On September 22, 2013, during a romantic getaway to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Hollywood actors Dennis White and Cherry Johnson found themselves pulled over by two cop cars. The trip only got worse from there. Being Black in America is still an issue, and tonight we have a voice for justice for Dennis and Cherry, and all the others mistreated and discriminated against because the color of their skin. These Hollywood actors will take your call. Again, the call-in number is 917-932-8962. And we go to the phone line and hope that Cherry and Dennis are with us. Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you folks?
We're doing all right. We're hanging in there.
Hanging in there, huh? Well, welcome to the show. Our nonprofit organization, the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation, educates and brings awareness to many genres of violence, if you will. But when you hear of the violence being done to folks like yourself by the people that are supposed to serve and protect society, we decided we needed to take a stand and sound the alarm. So, Dennis, bring us back to September 22nd, if you will.
Okay, it was roughly around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Cherry and I was on the way to Myrtle Beach. We were driving, and it was a highway. I think it was 501. We saw cotton fields on the right side, and Cherry has never seen cotton fields, so she wanted to, you know, get a closer look. So simultaneously, my check engine oil light came on. So it was the perfect reason to pull over. So I pulled over to the side of the road, and we got a car, checked the car. We took some pictures, and we were only there for, like, maybe 5 minutes. And walking back to the car, a police car came up behind us with his lights on. So when he parked behind the car, you know, Cherry was, like, on the side, her passenger door, put her hands up and said she was, you know, taking pictures. He grabbed for his gun and told us to get in the car. So we adhered to that, and we got into the car. He came and asked for my license and registrations, which I provided. He went back to the car to check it. Everything came back clean. And then he came back to the car and asked us, you know, a million of questions of, why were we here? Where are we from? Where are we going? How long are we going to be in town? I showed them a flyer that we were in town. We did an acting workshop in North Carolina. And, you know, I answered pretty much all of his questions. He then went back to the car, came back. He asked me to step out of the car, which I did. And he asked me more questions. How long have I known Cherry? How long have we been dating? Where do we meet? Like, just questions that had nothing to do with the stop or whatever. So then he proceeded to walk over to her side of the car and ask her questions. He took her driver's license, went back to his car, checked it, and as he walked back to the car, he told me that she had a warrant for her arrest, which I didn't believe. He went to her car and told her, and
I told him no, I didn't. I've never done anything wrong, so I didn't have a warrant for my arrest. And that's when he started questioning. He wanted to know where I was from. I said, I handed you a California ID, sir. I came from California. He wanted to know how long I had lived in California, where I was originally from. Why did my parents move me to California? Then he questioned me about a slew of other things, who Dennis was, how long we'd known each other. He went back to his car, and then he walked back up to me again after he spent maybe roughly 2 minutes in his car. He came back and told me I did not have a warrant. I told him, I know that. Then he asked me to step out of the car. He took me to the front of the car, and he proceeded questioning me again, but this time it was, you know, did I have marijuana? If I did, he would just write me a citation and let me go. When I told him, no, I did not have marijuana, it was, do you have cocaine? No, I do not have cocaine. Do you have crack? Do you have prescription pills? And I told him, no, sir, I don't have anything. Maybe I have a Midol because I'm on my period. That's about it. Then he told me to get back in the car. And as I was getting back in the car, I sat down, and he shut the door for me, and I looked at him, and I said, sir, can I ask you a question? And he just looked at me, and I said, are you doing this because we're black? He kind of tapped on the window, like the side of the door, and walked back to his car. Within 1 minute, he was putting on his gloves, and he was handcuffing Dennis.
Yeah, well,
why
he came
did he
back.
Put on his gloves? Why would he have put on gloves to put on handcuffs? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe he didn't want to touch my skin or something. I don't know.
I've never been handcuffed before, so I don't know.
Yeah,
either
have
I. So that's why I was wondering if all police officers, before they handcuff people, put on, were they rubber gloves or driving gloves? Or
they were like black leather gloves.
Yes.
Weird. Okay, finish. I'm sorry.
Okay, so he before he cuffed me, he asked me, could he search the car? And, you know, at that time, you know, I was frustrated from all the questioning. I was like, no, you know, this has gone too far. No, I know my rights. You can't search the car. So he asked me, did I have anything to hide? Why wouldn't I let him search the car? I said, because it's just my right. That's when he put the handcuffs on me. Told me to turn around, and he cuffed me. And then he walked over to Sherry. Well, when he cuffed me, Sherry was in the car, and she was like, you're cuffing him? You know.
Yeah, I did. I freaked out. I yelled out the window, why are you cuffing him?
And so he walked over to her side of the car, pulled her out, and he handcuffed her.
I was on the phone, and I was texting. I was on Twitter, and I was texting my mom because at this point I started getting really scared. I was in a strange place. I felt like I was in the middle of nowhere, and I wanted people to know where we were.
Where you were. Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Without a doubt.
And so when he got me out of the car, I told him, I said, I just want to finish texting my mom. And he said, you can text her later. And I said, what are you doing? Are you going to cuff me? And he said, yeah. And I said, what are you cuffing me for? And he said, for my safety. He took my phone out of my hand and kind of tossed it on the passenger seat. And put my hands behind me and cuffed me. And I was saying, for my safety, sir, I don't know you. And I don't feel safe right now. I'm feeling really uncomfortable. The more I spoke, the tighter my handcuffs got. And he was escorting me to the back of the car where Dennis was.
And there was only one cop at this time, or was this with the two cop cars?
When I was walking, when he was escorting me to the back of the car, that's when the other cop was approaching.
And how did he react to all of this?
He was very, he didn't act shocked, but, you know, he started asking Dennis some questions. He was more mild-mannered, and he wasn't as brash or as mean as Barfield was.
Yeah, he you know, I had to realize that, you know, the whole good cop, bad cop situation was in effect. You know, we pleased with him, you know, like, you know, what do you, you know, tell him, you know, why are you letting him do this? And he asked me who we were, what did we do? I told him we were actors and everything. And he asked us what shows were we on, what movies were we on. So I, you know, gave him the information. He didn't recognize Cherry. And he asked Barfield, Shad, S-H-A-D, Shad Barfield, the officer in question, didn't he recognize Cherry? And he said, yeah, I know who she is. You know,
Shad just asked again, could he search the car? And I was like, you know, what do you want to search the car for? And he was like, I want to search the car. And I said, you know what, sir, I'm not trying to be difficult or anything, but can I get a supervisor, a watch commander on duty down here? And he said, oh, you want to play that game? Oh, okay. Well, if you want to play that game, then I can arrest you for trespassing and petty larceny. And I said, petty larceny? And he said, yeah, you stole cotton. So he asked again. He was asking, could he search the car? And Dennis said, you know, well, if you search it, are you going to let us go? And he said,
yeah. I'd be afraid that they would plant something at this point.
Exactly. Exactly. I was very afraid, but that's, you know, I just started praying. But Dennis was like, just search it. You're not, you know, you're not going to find anything. He went to the passenger side, and he grabbed my purse, and he started looking through it, and his comment was, wow, you just have money everywhere. I only had $300, if that. He searched my toiletry bag and my backpack and then my day bag, and then he went to Dennis's bag, and he pulled out Dennis's backpack and started searching through it, and then he found something that he thought was marijuana, I guess, and he asked Dennis, oh, what is this? And Dennis looked at it and said, it's a tea bag. And he was like, you know, I have a way of checking this or testing this. And Dennis was like, do what you want. It's tea. And then Barfield smelled it, and he was like, oh, yeah, you're right. It is tea.
And so he finished looking through everything, all of our bags, and found absolutely nothing, and then took the handcuffs off, and that was it.
And then what was it at this time that these officers warned you against the environment or the demographics you were in to warn
no,
you
ma'am.
Against other police?
No, ma'am. That had happened earlier before we ever stopped to look at the cotton. Dennis got a speeding ticket for going 40 in a 35.
And
in
two
a 35
cop cars. Yes.
And you were going 40.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so you get stopped originally. You get a speeding ticket. The cop warns you, and then coincidentally, you get pulled over, and two cop cars show up?
Yeah, 15 minutes later.
When he gave us that warning that the cop presence only gets worse from here, I just took it as we needed to slow down.
Right.
Like, they were picky on their speed. I didn't take it as, you know, we will be picked on or we will be stopped again. I wasn't even thinking that at that time.
Okay. So after this all transpired, how did it end with them taking off the handcuffs and letting you go?
Well, after he I'm sorry. Can I back up before he searched
please.
The car? I asked, I said, sir, why do you want to search the car? And he said there could be a dead body in there. And so the dead body was like the only probable cause that he gave us. And after he finished searching, there was no explanation, there was no anything. He just took off the handcuffs and walked back to his car.
And what did you make of it, Dennis, when he said there might be a dead body in the car?
I felt like he was just fishing and was just, you know, just needed something to say. You know, from my perception, it was like he was asking us all these questions that hopefully that we'll trip up on our answers. And when we wasn't, you know, he could try to take it as far as possible. And, you know, because we wasn't doing anything wrong and we had nothing that was incriminating, our stories were consistent. You know, and before he, before the second cop even came, which I think we felt to let you know that he gave me a warning citation.
Before we were ever handcuffed.
Yeah, he gave me a warning citation.
Warning of what?
It was checked off as other.
And was there anything filled out on the line under other?
No, not at all.
No. When we got to Myrtle Beach, Shirley, I called my attorney after, you know, we got handcuffed, and I was like, what do we do? Because Dennis really wanted to go back to the police station to make a formal complaint, and I didn't because I was scared. I was like, Dennis, if you go back to the police station, we still have to get out of their county. I don't know how many times we'll be stopped after that. So the attorney was like, no, you come home and you file a complaint from there. So when we got back, I called the police station, and the first thing I asked was for a copy of the incident report of the stop. There was no incident report on file, so he never documented that the stop even happened.
Have you verified that that officer, the two cops that actually stopped you the second time, are actually cops?
Yes.
The lieutenant who I spoke to knew exactly who we were talking about. He never said that they were not on the phone. But since that day that I made the complaint, I have called the police station back several times and nobody will respond back to me.
Well, they haven't had a problem getting a statement out to the media, so it's ironic that they wouldn't call the people that were victimized by their own people. Just somebody's, just my point of view from seeing their statement recently. I want to do this. The call-in number is 917-932-8962. Cherry and Dennis will take your calls and answer any questions that they can. We have a slew of people that are either listening to the show or want to ask a question, but make sure when you call in that you press the prompt to speak with the host, because if I don't see that your hand is raised on the switchboard, I'll just assume that you're listening to the show where you may be at tonight. So with that said, we have a caller from the 843 area code calling in. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for our guest tonight?
Yes, ma'am. I was just calling in to know when he put the gloves on, did he make any type of statement or anything when he put his gloves on?
No, not at all.
Okay, from what I'm seeing, from what you explained, when the phrase or whatever question was asked to him, I'm thinking if they were black gloves, black leather gloves, that was trying to use that as an intimidating factor. Do you see it in that way?
I totally agree. I totally agree. I mean,
okay.
I was in the aspect of why he put them on.
Okay. Have anybody been able to get any type of information on this officer's character or anything about his disposition in past incidents or anything? Has anything been given up to media or anything?
Great question.
I don't want to speak too soonly, but yes, we have been reached out by some other people who have had some run-ins with Mr. Barfield, and nothing has been positive. Well, there's been some that have been positive, but there's also been some that have called us dirty words.
There's been other people who had interactions with him that, you know, they've been profiled and disrespected by this particular officer. They remember the name, they remember how he looked and everything. And so this has been going on in his career for a long time. So this is nothing, the way that he approached with us, it didn't seem like this was something that was haphazard, something that he's been doing a long time. And maybe his buddy Cribs, was, the other cop named Cribs, was involved in, I don't know. But it wasn't something that just was random.
We've gotten a lot of hits from people in Marion County who say that they're not shocked. This is something that happens all the time.
Oh, okay. One thing that I can probably say is sled investigation. That's what the sheriff said that he was going to do, have sled investigate the incident?
Mm-hmm.
He told me that they were going to investigate, and he would get back to me. He said since there was no incident report, that he would pull audio from dispatch and look on the dash cam, but I have not gotten a response from them since.
What surprises me is that that sheriff would actually say that he's going to have someone investigate Mr. Barfield, and from my knowledge of Mr. Barfield, this will be maybe his third or fourth incident of being investigated with, if not that same department, a department within that county. And
wow.
From information that that I know, Mr. Barfield was terminated from that same department some years ago, maybe less than five, maybe a little bit more than five, for actually pulling his revolver on a citizen in a confrontation, and he was under sled investigation then. And from that incident, they found out that from a prior sled investigation, he had lied during the sled investigation because I think he may have hit someone with an object in an arrest. So when I heard what was going on and I heard it, it actually made me try to figure out why would the sheriff actually want to put emphasis on an investigation when he knows the type of character of officer he hired back to his department that was already terminated.
From a marketing and PR standpoint, I can tell you that I was very surprised at how quickly the police issued a statement, and I didn't hear an apology. I heard that they were going to launch an investigation. I did not realize he was going to bring in an outside company to do an investigation of one of their own people, but traditionally, police don't issue statements so quickly, but I believe that they felt pressured because of the media, and I have to give you both kudos for taking it to the media, because I learned about it from the CNN iReport. And by placing that on there, knowing that this had transpired and who you are, the media matters here, because the media is holding this police department and that city in South Carolina accountable. And sadly, I think they either need a PIO officer or someone, but right now, if I was representing that police department, I'd tell them to stop making statements until they know the facts, because obviously learning about this officer through you, caller, you obviously have known something about this officer in the past that I believe Cherry and Dennis are probably learning a little bit more about. And my biggest question would be, how could this lieutenant, this sheriff, come out and say there's going to be an investigation when this is his fourth or fifth offense? Enough is enough. You know, why would you want somebody like this on your team unless people before these two have not spoken up? And that is a really bad situation for this police force, but you know, at this point, I say, if there's more of you out there, more of you need to call in, tweet about it, talk to the media, get an attorney, do something, because officers like this are time bombs on our streets.
Yes, ma'am, and I'm going to leave, but I want to tell Miss Sherry, she will probably know exactly who I am, because she's, you know, whoever she's spoken with and told her about an incident, I'm the one that was terminated from the department dealing with Mr. Barfield. And, you know, from that point, I just say that that department practices things of that nature. There's a lieutenant that's there that had been terminated from another department that was in a situation that actually it was police brutality on a traffic stop, and he was working for Dillon Police Department, and he was hired by the same sheriff through that same police department. So when it comes down to certain things that happen with that department, it's not shocking to me, because while I was there trying to battle within different things that I saw of just dealing with internal officers trying to make sure they did the right thing, I was ultimately targeted and actually terminated from the department because of certain issues. But I do really want to say I do appreciate you stepping up, because the things that I went through and my significant other went through, this gives us just a little relief to say that, you know, someone is actually trying to get control of this county.
Amen to that. Well, thank you for calling in, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have another caller from 773 area code. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for our guest?
I do. My name is Janaya. I'm from Chicago. I was basically calling because I think it's very rare that you guys were actually telling your story and everything that happened. I actually remember the day that it happened, because Cherry was tweeting and Facebooking about it, and I was like, wait, what? You know, because I've heard about these incidents several times before, but I guess the question would be, when did you guys start the Morse Project? Is that something that you just came up with, or was that something that you were considering beforehand because of instances you've heard in terms of police brutality and harassment?
The Morph is something that we came up with because of the situation. It's the movement opposing racial profiling and harassment.
Right.
And the reason why, you know, we decided to come up with something of that nature is because we've gotten so many people contacting us saying that they've been racially harassed across the country, and especially
right.
in that
Absolutely.
Country. And so there needs to be some type of movement to help eradicate that situation. So, you know, we didn't expect this to happen. We didn't want this to happen. But because it happened to us, we feel entitled to help those that, you know, have the same situation and to stop it so it won't happen again. So, you know, if you're interested, you know, it's called The Morph .org, morph.org. So, you know, we're trying to come together and get the word out.
Thank you so much for noticing my tweets and my Facebook, too. That was my exact point. I wanted people to know where we were and what was going on.
Right. Yeah, because I was reading it. I was like, wait a minute, did you say she got stopped? Because I saw the little small Facebook post. But then on Twitter, you was like, man, we just got stopped for doing 40 to 35. Really? How many times can we get stopped today? So then when I saw it on the report on CNN, I was like, oh, my goodness, because it really broke down exactly what happened. And it's a shame. And I think the problem is, like, this has been happening for years. And so what do you think it is that's holding people back from saying something now? Because we've had social media for years, but we haven't heard. Like, people won't even report this when it happens. They kind of just brush it off and won't say anything.
It's driving me crazy, because people right there in Marion County and all over the world, it happens. But they're just hit with a grain of salt that, hey, this is the way our town is. This
exactly.
happens. Hey, I don't know. Some people have even written me, I don't know why you feel that you're special and you should have different treatment. And I've written them
right.
back.
I was like, wait a minute.
Different treatment.
I've written them back, and I said, I don't understand. How come you haven't said anything and you think this is okay?
Exactly.
I think people have just, you know, they've just taken it for so long, they just think that things can't change.
They've been conditioned to think that it's just natural. And, you know, I've had a guy telling me that, oh, that was light. You know, that was nothing. I've had it worse. You know, so Dennis shouldn't be
right.
that man. Any injustice at all is an injustice. So, you know, we have to stop being conditioned to think that it's okay.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree. So So, but yeah, it definitely has taken a lot, you know, for you guys to come out and say something, because they're like, oh, well, you know, we're the actors. It's not about that. It's about the fact that this happened and the fact that nobody else is saying anything. This isn't happening.
The sad thing, though,
you haven't seen it on Twitter or Facebook at all. There's no news report about this.
The sad part of it all is that they are an African-American Hollywood couple, and that's why the media picked it up. It's not
exactly
that, you know, there's a Spanish couple, a white couple, a black couple that are just a layperson in the community. It's and I give them both kudos for using their celebrity to make a difference here and have a voice for justice, because more people need to stand up to this, and a lot of people in that community are probably afraid to say anything. And because this happened to you on their soil, you are their voice right now, and I give you kudos. And I think if more people did this, it would be great. But, you know, in reality, the media won't listen to a story like this unless, of course, it's somebody that makes a sound like they did. And iReport was a very good way to make that sound, I have to tell you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right now, that's the best about our job, is because it gave us that platform to fight for something that we believe in.
Right, exactly. Ma'am, do you have any other questions?
So with the new organization, have you guys planned to, like, start doing forums? Have you thought about, you know, transitioning to it so it can be something like maybe a radio show at some point, so that way if people are comfortable, they can tell their stories on record?
Well, we're trying to pursue every avenue to get the word out and to reach those that have been in the situation. Hotline, maybe radio, just anything that can bring people together, know that there is some people that are interested in trying to stop it.
And for me, I feel like it's important that we travel around the country and go to those police stations and maybe offer some sort of sensitivity training.
Totally get
it. Yep. I agree. I definitely agree with that. So thank you so much, you guys. Take care, and God bless.
Thank you for calling in, ma'am.
No problem.
There is a question in the chat room for the both of you. They say, hello, very interesting show. I have a question. Have your guests been harassed by police in the past, or was this their first experience of this kind?
Well, I've been stopped by police officers before as a teenager. I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood. So there was a point in time when every time we drove down the street, we got pulled over. But this was the first time I was ever afraid for my life.
Well, me personally, I have several times. I grew up in North Carolina, so I've had situations like that. I've had a situation happen to me in New York. And other states. It's not just specific to South Carolina. I've had guns pulled out on me in New York City for no reason, and made me get on the ground, spread eagle, and because they just didn't know who I was. You know, there was nothing that happened from there. I made a complaint, and they issued me an apology. But it's. This is not the first time. For me, it was a little more crucial because I had, you know, my girl with me. So, you know, to have her life in danger and jeopardy made it that much more intense.
We have a call from 302. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for our guest tonight?
Yes. Hello. This is Crystal Diggs. I was calling to say that Cherry and Dennis, again, I can't apologize enough that I am so sorry that, you know, this incident has happened to you, but I am grateful that it's able to have people come forward. I've been getting emails and phone calls like crazy with people, you know, telling me their story.
Thank you, Crystal. I mean, you definitely don't owe us an apology at all. It'd be nice if the police department would apologize. Crystal Diggs is actually the lady who wrote our story and put it up.
Oh, our hero. Fabulous. fabulous, Crystal. That putting it on iReport was the perfect way of getting attention. Good job.
Absolutely. I definitely agree. When they told me their story, I was just in shock, but I knew that something was going on because Cherry was tweeting everything that was happening. But, you know, when I wrote the story, when Dennis was telling me everything that happened, I was just like, okay, this is going to get big. I have a feeling it's going to get big, and I didn't, you know, think that it would be, you know, over 300 comments on the article at all.
Well, how are the comments? What's the balance of the comments you're getting?
Well, there are some negative comments, but then there are some comments where people are coming forward and saying that they've seen Officer Barfield before and he stopped them, and, you know, a lot of people are apologizing on behalf of the state that, you know, has done wrong to them. But it's more negative comments than positive, but it's a lot of people who, you know, speculate and say that that didn't happen or that this did happen.
Mm. Now, the property you were on that you got a ticket for or a citation for, have you found out who the owner of that property is?
No, there was no home or anything nearby. There were no private property keep outsides. We were, like, more on the side of the road. We weren't in the middle of these people's fields or these people's property or anything like that.
Had you picked cotton?
I did pick a piece that I
okay.
took a picture with, yes.
And you took, we saw the picture online. So basically you had a citation warning. Now, when you got in touch with Crystal, Crystal, when you wrote their story, how did that make you feel writing it? Because I can tell you, as soon as I saw the iReport come across my desk, it was just like, okay, I'm going to invite them on. We do that a lot with a lot of people in Hollywood and journalists. And and Cherry responded right away. So obviously you made an impact and you told a story that needs to be talked about. But how did it make you feel as a reporter to have to write a story about something racially that these two individuals were profiled, at least from our opinion, that's how it looks, and what they went through?
Well, it definitely made me feel upset. I did used to watch Cherry when I was a kid on Family Matters. And, you know, me and Cherry have become friends. So I felt upset because it's like, you know, this happened to my friend. So I was thinking at the standpoint of Cherry, my friend, versus Cherry, you know, the superstar. So it was just, you know, it was definitely upsetting. And when they were telling me the story, I was just like, oh, my gosh. But what I really wanted, I wanted people to believe me. You know, I'm not in the limelight like that. So I didn't know if people would be like, oh, well, she's just making this up just to get, you know, kudos for being a writer, which wasn't the case. When I got contacted by the producer from CNN, you know, they asked me all these questions. How do you know Cherry and Dennis? How long have you been friends with them? Do you have sources that this is really them? And I'm like, really?
Oh, well, yeah, that's the... That's how the media has to do it. They have to stay neutral, and they have to go to the police. So that's why, you know, because of your story and because people wanted to run it, they needed something from police, which I feel that the police at the time felt pressured to issue a statement. And, of course, it wasn't an apology. It was a statement almost defending their own police officer. So, you know, To play devil's advocate, that's how the media has to do it in order to stay neutral. That's why we invited them on this show. I don't have to call the police and ask them.
Right.
But, you know, in hindsight, doing the media and CNN running it was just perfect because I didn't know the story that much either. I just knew what I read in your story. And when we pitched it to HLN, and they did Jane's show, and I saw Cherry cry and just break down. It was just like, I'm not black, so I don't know what she went through, but I can almost tell you that just seeing it in her face and hearing her story when she was talking to Jane, it was just heartbreaking.
Yes, absolutely. I definitely agree. It, you know, it's very unfortunate that, you know, that situations like this happen, not just to them two, but to a lot of people. But I'm, like I said before, I'm just glad that people are able to come forward and no longer be scared.
Amen to that. I totally agree with you. We
and
do
I
have a question. If you want to continue joining us, Crystal, we'd love for you to stay on the show if you'd like.
Sure.
Completely up to you. We do have a question in the chat room. Do your guests feel that, let's see, ask the guests if they have fear and distrust towards law enforcement because of this experience?
Oh, I hate to say it, but yes. I come from a law enforcement family, so I've never been afraid of the police before in my life, but I can say every time, I haven't driven that often since the incident. Every time I get in the car and I see a cop car, I kind of get nervous and straighten up and make sure that my lights are turned on or whatever. Yes, I'm scared.
What about you, Dennis?
Yeah, there's a little apprehension. You know, I've had tickets before in my life. We all have been pulled over by the police for whatever reason. But to have just to be pulled over or to be accosted for absolutely doing nothing, it makes you a little apprehensive in the future. And I am, like, driving around. I'm a little scared. We were supposed to go to Phoenix to do some work out there, and we were supposed to drive. And because of the situation, we decided it wasn't in our best interest to drive out there. So, yes, there is some remnants of fear from that, but, you know, that's just going to drive us to fight harder.
In fact, I can tell. Dennis and I went to get something to eat the other night, and a security car drove by. You know, like the little security cars with the lights and stuff on the top of them?
Mm-hmm.
Dennis and I kind of, like, looked over all scary, and then when we noticed that it was a security officer, not a cop, we just kind of giggled at each other. Like, it's ridiculous.
It is. I can just imagine how it can feel. And just so that we keep this show level and balanced, not all police officers or police departments react or act this way. So we want to let our listeners know, you know, our organization, we work closely with law enforcement on all levels across this country. So not all of them are this way. But on the tail of the sentencing or the lack of in the Trayvon Martin case and everything, I think a lot of behaviors are heated. And do you think that things of that nature with Trayvon Martin and other cases of that nature may have a factor on how much power these two officers felt that they have?
To me, I mean, as I grew up in a cop family, like I said, my aunt's a cop, my uncle's a cop, my little brother's a cop. I know a ton of cops. I've been a strong supporter of LAPD, the Los Angeles Centurions, which is the police department's football team here.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think it would make them, you know, be more professional, make sure that they're always courteous with the officer, the one that we ran across. There was no courtesy and there was no professionalism on his standpoint, you know, with the little boy who just, well, he's not little, but the college kid who had the car accident, who was just killed by the police officer. I mean,
right.
I would think that they would take more precaution not to jump the gun.
I'd agree with you, especially with an officer of this nature who, according to the last caller, had been terminated once before and such. I just had coffee with somebody in regards to a situation where police beat her brother, and there's an investigation into that case. But come to find out, that same officer has been reprimanded many of times, and two families have won millions of dollars because of that officer, and yet he still has his job. So I guess I ask the question, when is enough enough when you keep an officer who's a liability to your agency and that badge to place him in a car to allow him to continue to do the same things he's been taken off the job in the past for? And sadly, he did it again, but if it wasn't for you two, the next person he did it to may have not stepped forward. So things happen for a reason. Isn't that what I texted you the other day? I said,
yes.
You know, things happen for a reason. You got to keep positive about this. There's a reason you were put where you were.
I don't think that the majority of police officers in America are corrupt. I think we have some very good police officers.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
There are definitely some bad apples in the bunch, and I believe that this particular police force department has a lot of corruption from the bottom to the top. And so it needs to be something, you know, getting rid of Barfield is the first step, but also maybe investigating the chief of police, Mark Richardson, investigating him and seeing where he lies in it. Because if this has been going on for several years, he's condoning it and looking over it, looking past it. So we have, you know, chief people in power positions that are condoning the situation, and it's going to keep happening over and over again.
Exactly. We have another caller from 270. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for any of our guests tonight?
I'm not sure that I have as much a question as possibly a comment. I don't know if you're taking those because of comparison to what the situation is. And it's not just isolated to where you are, as it is all over the country. I mean, let's be real. I know that this is a hot topic right now, but this profiling thing happens to not only, you know, African-Americans, but happens to whites as well who are associated with African-Americans. And that's where I grew up, in the Midwest. And, you know, not knowing if you're looking for examples of those stories, but you got to understand, this thing happens every day all across the United States. And it's got to stop, not just with black, but it's got to stop as white as well. Because you take white guys like myself who grew up in a Midwest town, grew up in an area called the Projects, the Jets, if you will, that because you're in a vehicle with three black guys, when it gets stopped, you know, you're automatically cuffed and associated with what they think's going on. And then you're told, hey, you don't want to be hanging around these guys. And these are cops telling you that.
Wow.
I'm offended by that. I'm offended by what is happening. And it's continued to happen. People can say that, you know, we're in a much better place now than we were 20 years ago. I don't believe that.
I don't know.
I think people are more quiet about it. Because it does happen
everywhere. But that's where we get even stronger, because as individuals we can only get so far. But if the country bands together, everybody decides that this is something that we're all going to speak up on, it's something that we're all going to report when it happens, they're going to have no other choice but to change their ways.
Absolutely. I agree, you know, because sadly, you know, I've had friends of mine who are African Americans said that I was like a ninja for our crew. And I never understood that for this past week when the story became so hot. And I called a friend and I said, What did you mean 20 years ago when you said I was a ninja in our crew? He said, you can go places we can't because your face is white. You're treated differently. I'm sorry?
That's sad.
It is sad, but because even though we grew up listening to, you know, Al Green, Teddy Pendergrass, I still listen to that music to this day. But because I have a white face and I can put on a suit, I can go places with the same values, the same culture, the same appreciation, the same work ethic as my African-American best friend growing up from Little League. And that's tragic. That shows me now, 20 years later, There's no real progress. Because if there was real progress, these police would not be pulling over two African Americans and creating this situation this country is really kind of, you know, humming and talking about right now.
A part of me feels like we're regressing. Like it did get better for a little while, and now it's just getting worse again.
Actually, if you think about this, please correct me if you think that I'm wrong. It's worse now than it was 20 years ago because it's acceptable to say things are different when they're really not. There's a mist.
I think it appears that it went away for a while and now it's stronger than ever, but because of the social media aspect, I believe that it's just being brought up more, where millions of people are hearing about it, where years ago, 25, 30 years ago, we didn't have the luxury of hearing a story like this unless it was printed in a newspaper. Oh, wait, what's a newspaper? You know, so today it's like a tweet from a celebrity being handcuffed and being accused that there's a dead body in her car hits millions. And I think the issues have always been there. They're just at the forefront now because you can't hide from them anymore, and you can't hide from when somebody posts a Facebook comment how ticked off they are about it. At least that's my opinion.
No, I agree with you 100%. I'm going to tell you again, as a white man from the Midwest, it never got better. There was a mute button put on it. Mute was hit on it for quite some time because people wanted to naivete believe that it was getting better. That's just a crock of bull. Now, what's happened is social media unmuted that button.
Exactly. Good analogy.
You cannot hide from it no more. You know, I'm going to tell you this. I grew up and graduated in 1988 when the black and white, there was still such a separation, especially in the Midwest. When I keep going to the Midwest and South, we all know it is what it is. Those are statistical facts. And I never understood the oppression as a teenager of the African Americans and this type of treatment until the last probably 5 years. I never understood the depth of it. I don't want to say I didn't understand it because I suffered from it. You know, I used to get notes in my locker, you know, don't mess with our man or you answer to the Klan. Well, me and a white guy would have a difference, and I'm a white guy. Never understood those things.
Wow.
But I've been in cars with friends growing up, going to a Dust Bowl, playing in a basketball. I played basketball at a black college, Kentucky State University, only white guy on the basketball or track team. So I've seen it at its worst, and I empathize with the situation. And I just think it's tragic that people can't shut their eyes and shut the damn mouth and get rid of the black, the white, the red being Indians, the yellow being Japanese or Chinese or Asians. Man, shut up. Let's live. Let's all be happy. Let's work together.
We're all human.
We're all human beings, man. Inside, we have red blood.
Yep. I bleed the same blood, as Melissa Etheridge would say. And I agree with you. Last 3 years, we've represented a family of a 14-year-old African-American teenage girl who went missing. It was presumed that her friend, a 16-year-old, had murdered her. The family brought us in. People from the city of Portland brought us in so that the riots wouldn't continue to happen with the parents going out after the police and the media. And it was then, and I'm 45, and I don't see anybody but a person in front of me. So color and ethnicity and all of that just goes out the window with me. And it wasn't until then, in 2011, when we took on that case, that I saw the reality of what a 14-year-old black girl who's missing had to go through in order to get media attention, also had to be looked for, to be cared about, and it gave me a vast reality of, you know, what the prejudice. No one asks me anything, like you're saying, caller. You know, no one asks us to do anything differently. And it wasn't until then that, you know, the gawking or the talking or the email threats and all of this kind of stuff, because of our association with that family, which are very close to us till this day. And, you know, it's a eye-opening experience. I know that we have somebody in the chat room that has asked, if the police had been more courteous to you folks, would you have felt less violated? In other words, is stopped and frisked more acceptable if they are courteous? Someone in the chat room is asking that question.
What if he would have been more courteous and just more professional, and he would have said, you know, oh, I apologize for the detainment, but this is a high risk highway or something like that, we probably wouldn't be here honestly right now. So yeah, for me, I could say,
or there was a murder down the street and a woman and a man in a description of your vehicle left town, or, you know, why ask if there's a dead body in your car? You know,
exactly.
Give you some...
If he would have gave some sort of probable cause and would have apologized, it would have been a lot easier just to go on about our way. But the fact that it was done with such, he was like honorary, like he was doing something right, you know, when it felt so wrong. That was my big problem.
Dennis, what about you?
You know, the thing about it is, which is sad to admit, that if he had to apologize or say, you know, I'm sorry, you guys, you know, I just, there's been a lot of crime in this area. We've been just trying to check things. It wouldn't have went this far.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it happens so much that, you know, we don't take action on it. And I feel like, you know, I've been pulled over by cops before who were nice, courteous, and they may have taken liberties, but because of their demeanor and their disposition, it was acceptable. Because, look, in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I to believe or promote that this is a crime-free country. There's so much crime and deception in this world. So, yes, cops have to do their job. So I understand that. But when they take it over boundaries, then that's when it becomes a problem.
Of course, I mean, the first two cops that stopped us, he was stern, but, you know, he said we were going 5 miles over the speed limit. We never thought once that, oh, they just targeted us because we were black. No, that we were speeding, so he says, in his county. And he issued his ticket and politely wrote it out, gave it to Dennis. He explained a court date and also said that he did not have to go to court because he lived out of state. He could just mail in the ticket. He told us how much the ticket would be. And we went on our merry way. So we never thought twice about those two officers who pulled us over.
And they were courteous to you.
They were, exactly. And it was two different
cars. They were doing
cars.
Their job. They said you went over the speed limit. You didn't fight it. They gave you the ticket, and you went on your way. But they did give you a warning that I found very odd. Did you find that their warning about, you know, you're only going to meet with more police down the road, or however they worded it? Did you find that odd?
It wasn't
odd until we got pulled over.
Yeah, it wasn't odd until we met with the second set of police. I mean, I did find it odd that there were two cops and two cop cars, and the way the one approached the driver's side, and the way the one, he didn't quite approach the passenger side. He approached the back of the vehicle. And I don't know. I didn't read into it much then, but I was like, oh, I guess he was like, oh, it's a girl. You know, it's not much of a threat. And they just went to the car and wrote the ticket and let us go. It wasn't until on our way to Myrtle Beach, after we had been on the side of the road handcuffed for an hour, that those words replayed in my head that made me say, wow.
Wow.
He won.
Well, you know, I want to do this. We have quite a bit of people with questions in the on the switchboard. I extended the time for a few more minutes to get through all these questions for you. So I'm going to go straight down the board. If you don't have a question, just let us know. But to make sure that we've covered our bases with everyone that has a hand raised. I'm going to go to you. So I'm going to come back to the 270 area code. Caller,
yeah.
Do you have any other questions for our guest tonight? We
well,
also have Crystal,
yeah,
the reporter that wrote the story.
Okay. I have one question for everybody. This is food for thought. Is I had a cop tell me once here in the Midwest, you know, their oath is protect and serve. We've all heard that a million times in the movies and in real life. But I also had a cop tell me when I was in the car with three African-American men that it was protect and shakedown.
Wow.
There was a difference. And I got to disagree. When they pull anybody over, I don't care if you're 90 or 19, there should be a level of respect and courtesy that is extended because we pay their salaries.
They work for us. That is correct.
You're damn right. They work for us. They're not paid to pull me over or pull my buddy over driving, and because someone is African-American in the car, get everybody out, handcuff you, slam you over the hood of the car, and interrogate you like you're a terrorist. And I know that's a very sensitive word, so everyone please understand the analogy, please.
No, absolutely.
But you don't protect and shake down. You don't do that to anybody of any color. And unfortunately, cops do not pull you over with the intent. You're always pulled over with an intent. When they hit that light, there's an intent. You're never pulled over with the intent to be courteous to you. They got their hand on the gun, their chest stuck out, their hat on, and they are ready to attack. And that's sad. And if your skin is darker, the attack mode is higher. And I'm saying that as a white man in the Midwest.
Anybody want to weigh in?
I just want to say thank you, sir, for your time, and thank you, sir, for your journey and sharing it.
Well, you're welcome.
And educating
us
on the Midwest, too.
Well, we know. I mean, let's be real. All of America is the same way.
It's
a little worse in areas. It's a little worse in some areas, but the ignorance is ignorance. I don't care where you go with it.
It's all about tolerance. Thank you
Absolutely.
So much for calling in, sir.
Thank you.
And once again, the call-in number is 917-932-8962. We not only have Dennis White and Cherry Johnson on the call talking about Black in America, we also have the Eye reporter, Crystal, who actually wrote their original story that got picked up by the national media. So if you have any questions, we're going through the switchboard right now, and we'll take your questions and wrap up the show. Again, 917-932-8962 is the call-in. And on the show page, you also can find the links to both Cherry and Dennis's links to their websites and such to learn more about what they're doing. And they're also, we're going to have a little talk quickly about their classes that they offer, too. So give us a call. We have a caller from the 773 area code. Caller, do you have any other questions tonight?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment real quick. I think the issue with our country is that when President Obama got elected, there's this whole thing of like, oh, racism is dead. You know, we've come so far, this and that. People don't realize racism isn't dead. That was never the issue. The Klans just took the white sheets off, and they're still around. So, I mean, just acknowledging that and really realizing that being colorblind is what they use, and the whole quote-unquote we're diverse is what they use to still separate everyone. So it's just a matter of realizing that and acknowledging that and noticing, like, say, if something like this happens to you, say something. Don't be afraid. Say something, because the more that we keep quiet, the more this becomes okay. So,
amen.
Just
anybody
want to
weigh in? Anybody on the panel want to weigh in?
I agree.
Okay, well, thank you, caller. Thanks again for the questions this evening.
Definitely.
All righty, we have a caller from the 501 area code. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for our guest this evening?
Well, not actually a question, just a comment that I've followed Cherry on Facebook for a long time, and I live in Arkansas, and I had contacted my best friend, who now lives in South Carolina, about Cherry and Dennis's experience there, and told her about it and asked her what she thought about it. And I wanted to know, could this have been an isolated incident, or is that the mentality over there of their police? And she said that it's a mentality of the police over there. She said it's a lot different there than it is here at home in Arkansas, where we're all referred to as, you know, rednecks. Over there, it's rebel country, and that it that their mentality is very racist. She told me of a horrific experience she and her black friend Kevin had, and the way they treated him and did him were some of the same things that Cherry and Dennis had described had happened to them. They did to her friend Kevin, and she asked him, why you got to do that to a black man? And then the trouble was on for her.
Wow.
Yeah, it's you know, it's been documented, and there's a lot of people that has talked about going through South Carolina and how extremely racist it is. You know, like I said, growing up in North Carolina, I went to Myrtle Beach a lot. You know, my first movie I did was in Myrtle Beach, and we went to the bike rally in Myrtle Beach almost every year. And, you know, you know that when you drive to South Carolina, you're careful, you don't want to make any waves, you know. And, you know, South Carolina is part of America. We're all Americans. We should be free to drive and go anywhere we want to and not feel afraid.
You know, a lot of people have reached out to us since that incident and asked us, please come back to South Carolina, and Myrtle Beach is a great place, but we'll give you back routes. That way you don't have to deal with the police so much. And the back routes are safer. And I was like, are you kidding me? I felt like they were talking about some Underground Railroad stuff that you read in history books. I'm sorry, but I don't believe I should have to take a different route than anybody else.
It's just like anybody that's Caucasian being told, I'll give you a different route than I-95 that goes through Harlem. No, I'm going to drive through to get to New York. I'm going to go through Harlem, and I shouldn't have a problem with it. So why should we give you back routes if you're traveling through South Carolina? That's ridiculous.
Exactly. I was mortified. I was like, I was just mortified at the mentality that they thought that, you know, oh, we go to Myrtle Beach ourselves, but we take this route. Why have you guys succumbed to that? Why do you feel like that's okay? I don't know. I was born on the East Coast. I was raised in California. I don't have that mentality at all. I have the mentality that you walk right, I'm walking right too.
Exactly. That's how I was brought up as well. Ma'am, do you have any other comments or questions?
No, just that, you know, I'm terribly sorry that this happened, and I'm so glad to see you, Dennis, and Cherry both standing up for this, because, you know, this shouldn't still be going on. And when, you know, when you're kind of stuck in one place and don't get out of, you know, your little comfort zone like me, you don't know a lot of what's going on out there in the world. And that was why I contacted my best friend over there and asked her. I said, you know, is this like a mentality over there? Could this have just been a bad cough or what? She said, no, it's a complete mentality over here.
And thank you, ma'am. You see how sweet you are. Thank you for your kind words. It's so easy for you to apologize for something, and you did nothing wrong. But the police station still can't apologize to us. Officer Barfield never even thought twice about apologizing to us. It's pretty, like, inhumane.
Definitely. That I can't believe that, you know, living in a small town, and I just got through dealing with some police corruption here that we had with the sheriff right before y'all's incident happened. And you know, you have to stand up for this. You can't put up with this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I promise you we will. We're
Thank
not going to
so
let
much.
It
go. Oh, go ahead, Sherry.
Oh, no, I was just saying we're not going to let it go.
Because you know, as Dr. King. Say that again, ma'am.
I said the power of people talking, the power of people standing up together for a cause, it works. It finally works. One horse town that I live in, and we knock somebody off their throne.
You got to stand up You got to stand up for what is right. And our organization, you know, our slogan is we have a dream, a world without violence and exploitation. And we live with what Dr. King has been quoted as saying before. And that is, you know, in reality, you know, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. And if we all lived that way, imagine what society would be like. So we sure do appreciate you calling in with your comments today. I'm sure that's helped Dennis and Sherry because they need the support, folks. Anyone listening out there tonight, share this podcast. Start the conversation because Dennis and Sherry, they've done something. Now we need to support them and have their back on this. Because being black in America shouldn't be an issue. It should not be an issue. So thank you, caller, for calling in and giving them that support. They've done nothing wrong here, and we need to remember that. They are the victims in this event on September 22nd.
They are surely welcome.
Thank you, ma'am. We have one last caller on the switchboard. We've been to him before. I believe he's in South Carolina. Sir, from the 843 area code, you're on the air. Do you have any questions?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, I was just listening in to everything that was being said. And for the most part, you know, for the information that I tried to give, it's just I just wanted to give some insight on what type of department you're dealing with and what type of leadership that they have there. And this type of incident, it goes further back than just this day and time. And you're dealing with a situation of an individual that's been elected to a position in that county where his forefather was in that same position and allowed certain things to go on, and you being the one that stepped up to give your what happened to you, that's opening up the eyes of a lot of people across of America and actually opening up for people that have lived in that area and that have been through certain discriminating issues and harassment, such as I went through while I was there. It's a blessing to know that we have someone that can speak up and be heard.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, being that I have family that lives in North Carolina, they've been hearing a lot of stuff that's been going on as far as based off this case. And, you know, they're like, the police officers and the people in near Myrtle Beach and Marion County are mad at me, and I better not come back to that area. It's going to be a problem. And, you know, even some of the media outlets out there have lied about my situation as far as the traffic ticket and everything, and just really trying to put a scar on it. But I'm not afraid. I can't wait till we go back to Myrtle Beach and Marion County and hold a peace rally out there and show that the justice has won. Because it's going to happen. He's going to get fired from that police station, and hopefully we can get an overhaul of that police station, but he won't be working there by the end of this year.
Dennis, I tell you, you know, with me, I've been there, and I've seen it, and I stood strong as long as I could, but I was ostracized. I couldn't get a job in the area. Everywhere that I went to talk to someone about a job in law enforcement, the sheriff in that area basically had my name blackballed, saying I couldn't be worked with, and different things that he would actually report to them, to the point of keeping me from in that area, because I filed with the EEOC because of certain issues that had went on within the department. And subsequently, when it came down to the point where he wasn't going to step in, and my last incident was with Mr. Barfield, and it was so bad that I was his supervisor, and I had written him up. A little while later, when I saw that they weren't going to do anything, I filed a retaliation with the EEOC. I say within 6 to 7 days, that sheriff was calling me in and terminating me. So, you know, from that point, I just sit back and I say, you know, they'll have their day in court, and hopefully they'll have their day when the ones that's in leadership in that administration that actually is allowing this to go on, they'll be either somewhere else and out of law enforcement completely, and some people can come in that actually wants to straighten out that county and do the citizens that's coming in through that area justice and treat them like somebody.
Absolutely. And you know what? I have to be fair. Not only did we reach out to the police department, we've also reached out to the city council. We've reached out to the mayor. No one has responded to us as of yet.
Well, they're not going to respond. They're not going to respond. When you reach out to the county council is going to give you information more so that the sheriff is an elected official and he runs his department the way he feels, because I actually did a grievance hearing with the county council and followed the procedures that the policy has said. And I don't know exactly, but I had information that said that their recommendation to the sheriff was to hire me back because I was wrongfully terminated. But in their policy, it says that if the sheriff doesn't take their recommendation, he goes with his own recommendation of not hiring me back because he was an elected official and he can make that determination. But when I had spoken with the EEOC had actually told me that if there was any grounds of an elected official terminating any employee, they still fell under the federal law of anything dealing with race, anything dealing with any type of handicap, age, you know, that would be a violation. You know, and through that, you know,
well, sir,
there was nothing. Yeah.
This
sir,
is
we
some
definitely
great
like, we definitely want to, we're going to pray for your situation. We definitely want to, you know, hear more about what's going on with you and figure out how we can, you know, come together and you know, have a strong force against the situation. So I appreciate your story. I appreciate you reaching out to us, and we definitely be in contact with you.
Absolutely.
Well, like I said, I just appreciate everything that y'all have done and just speaking out, because for what I went through, I don't want to see nobody else go through it. And for what you and Sherry have went through, I don't want to see anybody go through that all either. And it's just a blessing to know that, you know, y'all are speaking up to try to help.
No doubt. No doubt. Yes. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much,
all
sir.
Right.
Have
all
a nice evening. Now, we have one last comment. Good show, very balanced, and guest comments are very common sense. I hope they will forget this horrible experience and never have to go through this again. So that's a comment in the chat room. Before we wrap up with you, Crystal, are you still with us?
I am.
Okay. Before we wrap up, any last thoughts? And obviously, with all of the callers that called in this evening, you might have a new story. I don't know. Any last thoughts for those listening to the show and how we can support your efforts as well? Because again, without that iReport that you put online at CNN.com. I don't think this would have gotten the legs that it has.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say that, you know, justice will be served. And it is said, again, that they went through what they went through. As far as people coming forward, as I stated, they have been contacting me. So you'll definitely see more stories coming from me about you know, this officer and situations that happen in that county.
Fabulous. Any last words, Dennis or Cherry, to Crystal?
Crystal, we would just like to say thank you so much, because you definitely gave us a great foundation of shedding light on the situation. And just everybody out there, please continue to support. Please talk about the situation. The more we talk, the more things will change.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. You know how
thanks
I deal
with
you.
Thanks again, Crystal.
Yeah. And Michelle, we appreciate you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're welcome. You're so welcome. For those of you listening to the show, the way you can help is share this podcast. Start blogging about it. Start talking about it. Open the conversation. You know, if we are not talking about it, justice will never prevail. So have that voice and stand up for what's right. Stand up for that friend. Stand up for that neighbor. Stand up for Cherry and Dennis. Many of you know that Cherry is from Punky Brewster and Family Matters. So Google her. I think your website is cherryjohnson.net. Go to her website. Dennis, I couldn't find a website for you, but I know that you've posted one about Morph. You want to give your website to everybody out there?
Yes, to find me, you can go to actlikeyouknow.org. That's a website for our acting workshops that we teach across the country. We'll be in New York, Connecticut, St. Louis, Detroit, Flint, Michigan, and some other cities and states. So that's actlikeyouknow.org. And, you know, if you have any stories about racial injustice, you can go to the Morph, MORPH.org. And, you know, social media. I'm at Dennis L.A. White. That's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Fabulous. And few minutes left. Can you give us a little bit of an insight on that acting workshop if anyone's interested?
Sure. We help actors, aspiring actors, get work. That's our goal, to give them the tools necessary to be working actors. So if you're interested in coming to an acting workshop, please, you can email us at likeyouknowent@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you. And you can also check me out on a TV show on NBC called Parenthood. Comes on Thursday nights at 10 p.m. You know, we just really out here to try and, you know, give knowledge to those actors that really are lost and really want to really make it happen in the industry. So if you're interested,
hit us
up.
What network is Parenthood on?
NBC.
NBC, the more you know, isn't that their campaign? How about we get NBC to do a the more you know with the two of you on tolerance or something
that
of that nature?
That would be great, wouldn't it?
I'd love to see a PSA on the television with that. Because the more you know, that campaign is very successful, and the more we keep it out there and the more we talk about it, the more we can combat it, and that goes for anything. And before we end, also in South Carolina in Myrtle Beach, where this all started and transpired on their way to a romantic getaway, many years ago, Brittany Drexel went missing, and she's still missing, and she was last seen in a hotel in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So please Google Brittany Drexel. Do what you can to help Dawn and her family find Dawn's daughter, Brittany. Any last thoughts from either of you? Dennis?
Just, you know, with everything that goes on in this country, the only way to stop things of that nature is by talking about it, by coming together, and by not stopping until we find justice. And I plan to be a vessel to facilitate that.
Fabulous. Cherry?
My biggest thing is each one teach one. Don't forget that you hold power within yourself. Know your power. Stand up for yourself.
Definitely. Well, thank you to both of you for joining us. And thanks for answering our tweet. We do that quite a bit when we see something that matters. And we make the offer. And whether the two of you or the Jane Velezes of the world, whomever, if you have something you want to have a voice for justice, just contact us at press@nwcave.org and share this podcast, because again, the more we talk about this, the more will be worked on and be tolerated and be fixed in our society. And tonight, I want to end by also saying that our Southwest Conference Against Trafficking is coming up in Pomona, California, in the Los Angeles area. We always have our trafficking conference on Martin Luther King weekend, so January 17th through the 19th, 2014. We'll be down in L.A. To learn more about our speakers and the conference coming up, log on to www.swcat.org. And to learn more about the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation, visit us at nwcave.org. And thank you again to the both of you. And if there's anything NW Cave can do from here on out, just let us know. And we wish you the best and hope that this never, ever happens again to you or anyone else for that matter.
Thank you so much, Michelle. You've been a complete angel.
We appreciate you.
Thank you so much. See you on Twittersphere. Thanks, you both. And we're going to end with our friend from American Idol, Brittany Kellogg, with Through the Ashes. And we say thank you to everyone that called in this evening. And you, too, can be a voice for justice. So stand up for what's right. Hug your kids tonight and be grateful that you live in the U.S. of A. Good night, everyone.
And hold me.